Okay, good.
Look, the topic of the shiur today is army or yeshiva. And I just want to say at the outset, I know that I spoke last time about college or yeshiva, announcing army or yeshiva, and obviously I have a certain viewpoint. I don't want to be like, you know, the typical racist and say, some of my best friends are Haredim. Not like saying that, but I just want you to know at the outset, even though I might say certain things in my own opinion, what I think, it's very important for us to realize that I agree, or let's say, we'll say like everyone on this staff, even though there's very many different types of people on the staff, we agree on 99.9% of things. I'm pointing out certain differences right now, but, you know, we all think kashrus is important, and Shabbos, and learning Torah, and davening. So, you know, you should know that about Gemara also, just in general. People sit there and learn Gemara, and they say, wow, Gemara is filled with machlokas. Just the opposite. The fact that they're arguing about the tiny little details. Everyone agrees that there's a God, and he created the world, and he gave the Torah, and he chose Am Yisrael to have the Torah, and there's something called mitzvot, and there's something called Torah Sheva Al Peh, and there's something called Midot Shatorah Nidreshet Ben, and we're arguing about, oh, I used the Kal Vachomer and used the Gzeirah Shavah, and therefore I came based. The truth is we agree on so many things, and there's just these tiny little things that we spend our time discussing the nuances. This is one of those things, nuances, and there will be disagreements here. In this, you know, I'm sure that many people on the staff and many people in this country will disagree with pretty much every word I say here. And that's okay. They're allowed to be wrong. You know, these are nuances. And that's what I want to point out before I begin. Okay, history. The state was formed. Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion met with the Chazon Ish. And they agreed to give a dispensation for those who claim Torato Umnota. Okay? This is based on a Rambam at the end of Hilchot Shemitah V'Yovel. From the end of Hilchot Shemitah V'Yovel, says, I think I might have mentioned it on Monday, that Shevet Levi was unlike other Shvatim. Shevet Levi was supported. They didn't have ancestral heritage. There were 48 Ari Levi'im. We're learning now Makos, six of them are in Miklat. And they were supposed to dedicate themselves to serving Klal Yisrael. And then the Rambam says at the end, and everyone could be like Levi. You could have Torato Umnato. His livelihood is Torah. He throws off the burdens of society. And he's Kodesh Kedashim, the Holy of Holies, in his service to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we said before that the Bir Halacha used that as a reason that maybe someone could be supported and learn in yeshiva, the way Shevet Levi was supported. And here the Chazon Ish used it to tell David Ben-Gurion that the Talmidei Yeshiva should be exempt from fighting, just like Shevet Levi was exempt from fighting. Talmidei Chachamim, they're like Shevet Levi, and they deserve an exemption. And Ben-Gurion agreed. And does anyone know how many people this exemption, you know, included? The grand total of 400. 400 people were exempted from serving in the army. Now, when this happened, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, who wrote many sfarim that we have, Modim Bahalacha, Modim Izmanim, Yishim V'Shitot, so many different sfarim, he wrote an article, and the title of the article was Mai Chazi de Domach Sumak Tvei. Okay, this is stolen from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Sanhedrin says, how come if someone puts a gun to my head and says, kill Moshe or I'm going to kill you, I'm not allowed to shoot Moshe? Because the Gemara says, who says your blood is any redder than his? Mai Chazi de Domach Sumak Tvei. Who says your blood is any redder? And that's what Rav Zevin said. Don't take the dispensation. Go in the army. Just because you learn yeshiva said your blood is redder than his? He said this is a terrible, terrible thing. We should not accept the draft exemption. He was ignored. And since then, the number has grown and grown and grown. And today, yes, sir?
I'm one of those guys.
Okay. And today, even with Nachal Haredi, Nachal Haredi has like less than 1,000 Haredim that enlist. As you know, the majority of people Nachal Haredi are, they're not Haredim, they're Chardalim, you know, they're from the Dati Lumi community. There's over 66,000 draft exemptions, some sitting in this room, that are handed out. Okay, so now, if you ask anybody in the Haredi community, you know, what should you do? They'd say, stay in yeshiva. Why should I stay in yeshiva? Because the Gedolim say to stay in yeshiva. End of discussion. There's nothing more to talk about. So I don't want to play my gadol's bigger than your gadol. You know, like, who determines who's a gadol, who's paskening? I'm just going to give you sources that everybody can agree upon. The sources are called Shas, Rambam, the Nitziv, who's like the head of all the yeshivas. All the yeshivas that we have today are based on the prototype of Lezhin Yeshiva. I'll quote sources from there. And if you want to tell me that, well, obviously my Gedolim know those sources, so I would say to you, okay, how do they respond? As Rav Avadia Yosef said, I mentioned this once in a Hall of Fame Rosh Yir, when someone accused him of going against the Ben Ish Chai, and he said, but here are my sources. And they go, well, he must have known what you said. He goes, that's not the way we paskan halacha, that he must have known. Give me a rebuke, give me, you know, a refutation, but don't tell me that he must have known. So I'm just going to throw out sources, and we'll figure it out. It's gotten worse. Like in the beginning, okay, this was this idea, but now it's gotten so much worse. Now you have a whole group of people called the Peleg Yerushalmi that, okay, here's the way it works. Since Ben-Gurion is an exemption, all Yeshiva Bachar has to do is go to Lishkat HaGiyus, the draft office, and write down, I'm Yeshiva Bachar Terto Umnato, and you have an exemption. But they don't want to do that. Right? So then, what happens is they don't declare this group, because it's like, why should I even have to do that? So then what happens is people from their group, they're now officially draft dodgers, because they're on the list of people who should be in the army. So they're like taken and arrested, and then people go on the protests and stop traffic and throw things, and like these crazy violent protests. This whole thing drives me crazy. Okay? And then they get so nuts that they start saying that going in the army is gzeirat hashmad. Now, so what does that mean? So that is the phrase that's used in the Masechet Sanhedrin, that when there's persecution against your faith, it's yaharog v'al yavor. Better to be killed than do this avera. It's gzeirat hashmad. Right? Because they say, all these protests, the government's trying to stop our Torah. Like I said before, the government is allowing you. I'm not so into it. The government's allowing you. Ben-Gurion agreed 74 years ago, right? That all you do is sign a paper. Torah to umnato. And you're not even willing to do that. And now you're saying the government's trying to stop our Torah. I don't know. I have a huge problem with this. And like I said, these remarks lead to violence against soldiers who happen to, like, sometimes you have a guy in an army uniform going to catch a minion in a Haredi neighborhood, and he gets beaten up. He gets surrounded, and he doesn't want to use his gun. It's like fellow Jews. They start throwing things at him, really? And it's in the news. Yes, it's terrible. On Purim, in many Haredi neighborhoods, they'll hang an effigy. You know what an effigy is? Effigy is like a doll, like a life-size doll of a soldier. No. And they'll hang him, and they'll put across the thing, say, Amalek. Okay? They'll have posters of soldiers, but their faces will be pigs. Right? And I just find it so distasteful.
That's the reason they're safe here.
Right, but here are these people that are risking their lives that they could sit there and live their life, and then, I don't know. So I obviously, I find this whole thing so disgusting. I yelled at coal guys here, because a few years ago, I told Rabina this morning, a few years ago, the leader of this faction passed away. Rabina happened to be in Chutz Laretz at the time, and the entire kollel packed out and all went to Levaya. When guys get back, I said to some of the guys that I'm friendly with, I said, you tell me that you suffer because of this group, because, you know, the average Israeli just sees a Haredi and thinks they're all the same, and they think you're like them, and you're not like them, and, you know, you're from, I don't know, whatever neighborhood, I'm not going to say the names of the neighborhood, and you have people in your neighborhood, and you have relatives, and they wear uniforms, and that's okay, and like, you're not like them. And then you left, and you went to Levi of this person who does all this bad things to you. Not only that, you're getting paid by Rabina to stay and learn. Rabina was around. Who asked Rabina if you're allowed to cut out and go? So, anyway, this like leaves a sour taste in my mouth, especially at the time that this was going on. I had kids in the army, you know, bullets are being shot at them, and I'm being told by the media that some of my fellow religious Jews think that my kids, what they're doing, is avodah zara, basically, because it's yarog v'yavor. So, obviously, emotionally, I find this difficult. But now I'm just going to talk about halacha, okay? Why the opposition? So here's the first reason, and to me, it's the only good reason. Okay? And there's a lot of reasons. Some of them I'm not even going to bother with because I think some of them are so weak and poor. But here's the first reason that's given. If you go to the army, it's going to corrupt our students. The army's a makom tuma, and if our yeshiva guys go, they're going to become corrupted, they're going to become irreligious. If, for example, you knew that if you went to the army, the psychologist said, you can't handle it, you'll commit suicide, no army would take him. That's why the armies do all sorts of psyche valves on the soldiers beforehand. So we, the Rashi Yeshiva, we're telling you, it'll be spiritual suicide for our students. They won't be able to handle it. And therefore, we don't go in. I just wonder. I mean, why don't you have any faith in the chinuch in your homes? Why don't you have any faith in the chinuch in your yeshivas? That they're strong enough to be dedicated to Torah, even when they meet someone who's not. Like, isn't it possible that if they mixed with people who aren't as religious as they might actually influence the others? Like, why not view it as an opportunity to do Kiruv? My second son went into the army in a Hesder unit. Now, does anyone know what Hesder is?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's more. Yeah, it's like a year and a half yeshiva, a year and a half of army, and then 2 more years of yeshiva. Okay? There's different philosophies. Some Hesder yeshivas go in, everybody together, precisely for this reason. We don't want to have any influence that might bring our students down. So they'll go into the army with like-minded people. Okay? And a lot of Hesder yeshivas do that. And obviously any Haredi yeshiva, that's sort of how Nachal Haredi got started, you know, can do that, where only like-minded people will be there. And without a fear that you'll be with some guy who's smoking on Shabbos, talking on his cell phone on Shabbos, putting up, I don't know, some pictures of his girl in a bikini. So, great. That is the view of many Hesder yeshivas. Some Hesder yeshivas say, we'll go in with like a group of what's called Beinishim. Beinish is like short for B'nai Yeshiva. But they'll be mixed with others. You know, it's sort of like influence. So the Hesder yeshiva that my son was in, That was their philosophy, the second one. 10 Hezder guys went in with 50 other Chiloni soldiers, and by the time they finished a year and a half, 10 of the 50 were Chozrei B'tshuva. From, they're back in yeshiva. Okay? A guy came over to me at one of, an army has lots of ceremonies, as you can tell from Kotel all the time. They have it all over the country, not just the Kotel. We just see Kotel once. A guy came over to me and said, Ah, Ta'aba Shal Yonatan? So he goes, Ah, Baruch Hashem. My son asked me for his tefillin. He hasn't put him on since bar mitzvah. Right? Father's so happy. So what happens is people develop stereotypes. Right? What do we do? When you were in America, you had a stereotype of what Israelis are like. Israelis, Americans are like this. Haredim think Chilonim are like this. Chilonim think Haredim are like this. And same with Dati Le'umi and everything. Everyone has their own view of what the other is like. I was explaining to Shmuel this morning at breakfast, he was telling me, there's racists here in the yeshiva against blacks. I said, there's racists here in the yeshiva amongst religious Jews. Haredim against the Tzionim and the Tzionim against the... Yes, everyone's scared of the other. And they put the other down. And it's terrible. And we have this view of the other. And it's a stereotype. And then what happens? You meet the person. And you go, he's not what I thought. Right? And you go, I guess not all, fill in the blank, are what I thought. And that's what happens in the army. It's the great, you know, melting pot. Everyone starts to see. And you're standing shoulder to shoulder, and in the army is lots of boring, long nights where two soldiers are just doing guard duty. You have lots of meaningful conversations. And people learn a lot about the other. Right? And this is what happens. So I'm asking, why is it that I wasn't nervous about my kids going to the army, losing their Yiddishkeit, but so many of my Haredi friends are? Like only my home is strong. Only my kids went to strong schools. Like, what are they so worried about? I'm not saying people don't go off the derech. People do. Okay? But, you know, all the people here, and I hear it in this yeshiva all the time, especially even Shana Bet guys, because they all know everything. They're so from, you know, you can't go to the army. It's Malcolm Tuma. But yet, they're going off to college. And some of them are going off to mixed colleges. I don't know. I would think it's at least as big a makom tuma, right? My kids are in the army. If you're a combat soldier, there's basically only men on the base. You got maybe two or three women that have a couple of like jobs that are doing things like social worker jobs, but it's pretty much only men. Not the same thing when you go to Queens College, right? Like, why is that okay? No, it's okay, right? I'm going to go to Shari Yashiv and learn in the morning. But so what? I'm just saying, like, I don't, you know, that happens to be Malcolm Tuma. So I'm just saying, this is what you need to know. In most armies, the military is comprised of most non-combatants. But in Israel, okay, I'll go further. About 80% of non-combatants in most countries, 20% combatants. In Israel, since we're so small, we need more combat soldiers. So we have like 40%. Okay? But you should know, amongst religious Jews, it's much higher. Because in the religious communities, let's say I lived in Neve Daniel for over 30 years, it's considered not just an obligation, it's considered a privilege. So if you go in the army, you want to go in to the best units you can go into. People that I know have laser surgery so that it can be in high-level combat units, because if you wear glasses, so then you get knocked down. Your profile gets knocked down. Because they want to be. They want to do the most that they can do. You have, even though, let's say, religious Jews, let's say Dati Jews make up, I don't know, 10 to 15% of the population. When it comes to officers, you mean you stay on for longer than your service, it's 40 to 50% are officers. Because they say, I want to serve my country. I want to do what I can. Hezder students that go to fight, 92% are in combat units. I told you, the average is 40. 60% are not. But like amongst the religious, you know, units, I remember it took years till someone I knew had a kid that didn't go to a Cabot unit. And it's because of some sort of physical reason. Right? He wanted to, but he couldn't. Right? You know, I didn't realize how different it was till my son told me after the Army, he was in Be'er Sheva University, and he was in some big auditorium, and the teacher asked, how many of you were in a combat unit? And only he and some other guy from my yeshuv raised their hands. Wow. Now I see what that 60% are. They're all up in Be'er Sheva, whatever. But like, you know, in the religious communities, it's considered a privilege. So, again, this idea was driven home to me by such a beautiful story. This idea that you can influence others. My son, same son, that I said their unit influenced people. My two other, whatever, two of them were in Hesder, one of them was on, doesn't matter. This kid told me that while he was in the Army, they were off on Sukkot, they got together with some friends for to do a Simchat Beit HaShoeva on Sukkot. And they were on the roof of some apartment, having Simchat Beit HaShoeva, and some kid from the building, Chiloni kid from the building, came and asked if he could join them. They said, ah, absolutely. And then this kid says, I'll never forget this story because I say it over every Sukkot. Kid says, can I say a Dvar Torah? Chiloni. Yeah. And he says, the Arba Taminim are representing four different types of Jews. And we all learned this when we were little kids in school as well. The Etrog that has scent and taste. So that's like the Jew who learns and has good midot. And the lulav from the tamar who has taste, that's like the learning. And the hadas that has scent, that's like the midot. And the arava that has neither is like the Jew who has neither. We all learned it like that, right? Everyone familiar with that midrash?
Yeah.
I didn't tell you anything new. Okay, so you knew, everyone else knew it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a well-known midrash. Then the kid says, or Musar. He goes, but you know, if the Arava hangs out a lot with the Hadas and the Etrog, it'll also get some of the scent.
Where do you learn it from?
I don't know. This is what this elementary school kid said. And that's what I'm saying. We should let Chilonim stay away from us. Maybe if we be with them, maybe some of our religiosity would rub off. It happened to 20% of the soldiers in my son's unit in just a year and a half of serving together. Everyone's sitting and learning and steiging just from conversations. One of the people that became religious was the commander. He came to my house for Shabbos. He started learning in my son's yeshiva and Bat Ayin, and he's now a Breslov or Chassid. Okay?
And
he was Chiloni. He was a Chiloni officer of the group. And he told me, because I was Shliat Tzibur for Friday night davening, and I davened as Karlach Minyan, so when we got up to, like, right after Lechadodi, so, you know, Mizmor Shir, I sang the Tov Lahodos Lashem, oh, she'll sang it. And he told me at the meal, the first time I had a hit or a root, an awakening, was when I saw in the dining room, after Friday night, the Beinishim were sitting around, they were singing, and I sang that song, Tov Lehodot, I had an awakening. That was my first awakening. And I guess he started having more conversation, whatever, that afterwards, he couldn't say anything as a commander to his underlings, but he said to my son, Yonatan, where do you learn? I want to know about yeshiva. And he came, and then he ended up going about dying. I've seen him. He was at my son's wedding. He has long payas. He's a firm guy. Okay? So, is it impossible we can have an influence? Why are we so scared? Like I said, are there casualties? Yes. There are people that go off the derech? Yes. But it's also possible that you can do something really special. Next, you ask most people here, I ask Rav Katz, I said to Rav Katz, it's a mechamah mitzvah. I'll get to that soon. Wow, I have to talk quicker. Okay, it's a mechamah mitzvah. What's that to not to go to the army? The army doesn't need us. The army has enough soldiers. Okay, I didn't say this to him, but I'm saying it to you. First of all, my opinion is, let the army decide then who they don't want. Not, since you don't need so many soldiers, I decided my whole neighborhood's not going. Make do with the rest. I think that's how it should work. I think everyone should come in and say, okay, we don't need you, we don't need you, we don't need you. But for us to decide, since you don't need so many people, we're not coming. I don't really think that's fair. And I'll go further. In a Mechemet Mitzvah, it's not about getting the job done. It's an individual mitzvah. I have a chiyuv to go and fight. I mean, let's say you got to davening a little bit late. They already had a minion. Do you say, well, they already have a minion. I guess I don't have to go. It's not about having the minion. It's like, this is my obligation. It's a chova on the gavra. I have to fight. And therefore, since it's a mitzvah, it's not bittul Torah. It's not bittul Torah to do a mitzvah. This is, like I said, religious Jews view this not only as an obligation, but as a privilege. And that's why people stay longer. And when I say this, I'm saying this to you as well. It's not Haredim versus Datiyim. Every single Jew, no matter what country he lives in, the Rambam says, we're called on to fight a Melchemet Mitzvah. And one of the definitions of Melchemet Mitzvah is to protect the Jews in Eretz Israel from enemies that attack. So, like, I love it when these Zionistic Jews who live in America tell me the Haredim are wrong. I'm like, what about you? I mean, it's a mitzvah on every Jew. It doesn't say it's a mitzvah on Israelis. It's a mitzvah on every Jew. And then I'll even go further. Even the majority of students from this yeshiva who have gone to the army, my opinion, they go for the wrong reason. You know why so many students from this yeshiva go to the army? Army's going to be good for me. Teach me discipline. I need the army. And that everything they said might be true. But you don't go to the army because you need the army. Go to the army because the army needs you. Your job is to go and protect Jews. Not, I need to learn discipline. Join a sports team. I don't know. But like, you need to go to the army because that is a mitzvah. It's an obligation to protect Jews. I was blown away by my like 20-year-old son. Like, he's in the army. He was in, you know, he didn't go to Hesder. He learned, then he went to the army to an elite unit. And afterwards, he went to officer's training. First he was a sergeant, then he became an officer. And I said, I'm living vicariously through my son, because I'm some stupid Israeli immigrant that I did all of 2.5 weeks of army service. You know, like, that was what they did for me. I was already older with kids, and they said, okay, we've seen enough, go away. You know, and now my son's in the army, and I'm living through him, you know. I feel like, oh, that could have been me, you know. So he tells me I'm an officer, and I'm so proud, right? And I say, Ellie, so, like, you want to make the army a career? I'm already thinking he's going to be the chief of staff one day, you know. So, you make the army a career? And he says to me, no, but I feel at this point in my life, it's the best way I can serve Klal Yisrael. I was going, wow. I don't have one student that thinks about how I can serve Klal Yisrael. All they care about is what's best for me. Well, I can't stay shut up. Bet I have to start college right now, you know, because I don't want to graduate college at 23. I have to graduate at 21. I have to graduate my whole career. Like, and here's my son saying, like, I'll put everything on hold. He didn't start college till like 25, 26. Been learning before the army, 5 years in the army, learning after the army. Yeah, okay, so I'll start later. He's like, Klal Yisrael needs that.
Married?
What?
When did you get married?
While he was in college. Yeah, got married later. Yep. I think he's 27. But I don't know. I just found it so refreshing. I don't hear that when I talk to people in this yeshiva. Now, what's another claim? You know why we're so successful? Our learning is what wins all the wars. Okay, in fact, some of you already gotten up to it. I'm sure, you know, depending on who your Rebbe was, they pointed out well to you. On Daf Yudam et Aleph, it says, Omdot hayu ragleinu b'sharei Yerushalayim. Pasuk that we have in Tanakh, feet stood strong in the gates of Yerushalayim, says the Gemara, what caused us to stand strong in battle? The learning that was going on in the yeshivas, that's what caused us to win all of our wars. Anyone get up to that yet in the Gemara? Matan, you got up to it? Okay. Bottom of Yudam and Aleph. I just want to point out to all of you, do you know Who said that pasuk? David HaMelech. Did David HaMelech fight wars? Yes. So I think what David meant is, absolutely, while I draft an army, all those under military age, over military age, I expect you guys pulling your weight and learning in the yeshiva. But those of military age, I'm drafting you into my army. Right? This pasuk didn't come from Bnei Brak. It came from David HaMelech. Okay? Now, some people even go so far as to say they contribute as much, if not more, than the soldiers. I've even been told, like I said to you, not every soldier is a combat soldier. So we as well are not combat soldiers. And therefore, our sacrifice, I've actually heard that word, is the same as the soldiers. Their sacrifice in the air conditioning or heated, you know, base medrash, sleeping in comfortable beds, while the soldiers are out there sleeping in, you know, little fox ditches, you know, little foxholes that they dug for them while they're lying in ambush in all sorts of inclement weather, with, you know, pulling these crazy ships that can't sleep, and they're their sacrifice is probably just the same. And I'm sure their parents are laying awake at night wondering if while they're learning in yeshiva, their kids are going to be blown up, their legs in battle or shot while they're looking for a Baba Basra on the shelf. And they probably just have, you know, these sleepless nights, and maybe they think they're going to be kidnapped as they move from the base medrash to the shiur room. You know, because they're targets, you know, the same way soldiers are. I'm assuming it's probably the same thing. Yair Lapid, a leftist politician, said such a true statement. He spoke to a Haredi gathering and said, "You won. You won." Ben-Gurion thought, when he gave in to Chazon Ish, fine, take your 400 yeshiva bachram. Then after a generation or two, you guys would die out. But you won. You've grown. 70% of Haredim are under the age of 14. About one-third of all first graders in Israel are Haredi. The population is growing and growing and growing. And Yair Lapid said, we're running out of non-Haredim for the army, but we're not running out of Arabs who want to kill us. You are victims of your own success. We need you in the army. We need you in the workplace. We cannot have a minority taking care of the majority's needs. I don't know. I think it's pretty hard to argue with that statement. I would go further and say, is a Haredi really doing God's will by not joining the army? I would think no. Last year we learned Sota. And the Gemara in Sota talked about who has an exemption from going in the army. It's based on Psukim. It says the heter is given to one who got married and didn't yet, got engaged, didn't yet consummate his marriage. Another heter, built a house, didn't yet move in. Third heter, planted a vineyard, didn't yet enjoy the fruits of his labor. And fourth heter, someone who's scared. Okay? And the Gemara has a question. Is that scared, like he's pissing in his pants, or scared, he's scared of his sins? And we paskin, scared of his sins. So I would say, you know who should be fighting in the army? All the frum people. Because all the sinners out there actually have an exemption based on the Gemara and Sota. And they shouldn't go. But all of that is irrelevant because all of those heterim, says straight out in the Gemara, is only for Mechemet Rishus. An optional war. A war for me to just like conquer new land. Let's say economically we don't have enough produce, so we can fight a battle to try to conquer land and get build up the economy. So Mechemet Rishus, those are the heterim. Mechemet Mitzvah, everyone goes, even a bride and groom from their wedding goes to fight. Okay, Machlokos Rishon, if the bride goes to fight or the bride goes just to do some sort of support stuff, you know, gets into the whole idea of women being in the army. But even a groom, which says straight out, Pasuk, goes in Mechemet Mitzvah, And nowhere does it say in the Torah anything about Sheva Levi. So, what's the heter by Melchemet Mitzvah? And here's what my true belief, what I feel. You can check with your Haredi friends or Rabbanim, but I think it comes down to this. I think the attitude, at least that I feel when I talk to people, is the army is beneath them. I don't need to do that, because I'm better than that. I do something really important. I learn in yeshiva. I don't need to go to the army. I don't need to work. Others should tend to my needs, because I'm learning, and Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. It is the most important mitzvah. But I have news for you. So is mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael Keneged Kulam. And mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is to conquer and settle the land of Israel. That's also Keneged Kulam. You look at the Netziv. Once again, Haredi Rosh Yeshiva Velazhen. What?
He was a Zionist.
Yeah. The Netziv says in his commentary in Bereishis, Shevet Yisachar, they sat in Kolel. All throughout the period of the Shoftim, they sat in Kolel. They were supported by their big brother, Zvulun. Famous Yisachar Zvulun. But David HaMelech drafted them all into the army. Only during the period of the Shoftim. All of Shevet Yisachar, they were part of the army, just like everyone else. I wonder if there were Nazi posters against David HaMelech with pig faces and stuff like that, drafting all the Yisachar people into the army. That would have been terrible. Five prakam later, Perek Memtet, he says those who aren't in the army should pay higher taxes and do some sort of Sheirut Lu'umi to be involved in helping out. And in Devarim, he says, Talmidei Chachamim should go to the front lines to boost morale and learn and daven there. Rav Nevetzel used to run around during wartime to visit the guys on the front lines, give shirim to them, try to give chizuk. So I find it interesting that we have just the opposite, that during wartime, the Haredim run away. Okay, I remember during Tzuk Eitan, 2009, fighting in Gaza. So Haredi Yeshiva in Ashdod. What? There was another one in 2014. This one's 2009, I think. Oferet Yitzuka, whatever. Which one was which? The Haredi Yeshiva in Ashdod ran to Beit Shemesh. Okay? And the Haredi Yeshiva in Netivot ran to Bnei Brak. Now, the thing that really made me upset, I was listening to this while I was driving the car, listening to the radio, and the interviewer was very sharp, and he knew, and he said, wait, why are you guys running away? Don't you always claim that your Torah protects you? That's what they claim. So what they answer? Yes. It's not, we're not worried, it's the sirens are disturbing. I don't know. How did the guy say that with a straight face? The sirens, we had to leave to Bnei Brak because the sirens was disturbing to learn. Anyway, on the flip side, as you might have heard when we were in Sderot, not only did Sderot stay there during all the stuff, Yeshivat Hezder Kiryat Gat came to Sderot to give them chizuk. During the Gulf War, YU sent students to Israel. All the alumni that were in all the different yeshivas went back to all the yeshivas they were in to give chizuk, you know, that we're coming here. They called it Operation, the war was Operation Desert Storm, or Desert Shield, I think it was called. So they, why you called it Operation Torah Shield, you know? And they came. Okay, great. So how come the Netziv said that the Tamachim have to pay extra taxes and do Shirut Lumi? I mean, isn't the Torah protecting them? It would seem to me that the Netziv says you can't claim to be sharing the burden without meaningful sacrifice. And today, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said, the greatest chesed an Israeli can do is serve in the Israeli army. And he quoted the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Both Abaye and Rabbah were from the house of Eli. Everyone from Eli was going to die young. Rabbah died at the age of 40. Abaye, also a relative of Rabbah, a nephew, and he's from Eli, he lived to 60. Says the Gemara, why did Abaye live 50% longer than his uncle Rabbah? Says the Gemara, because while Rabbah was involved in Torah, Abaye was involved in Torah and Gemilut Chesed. Yeah, Torah is important. but so is Gemilat Chesed. Said Rav Lichtenstein, there is no greater Chesed that you can do today in Israel. Unfortunately, I personally don't think it's about what is the best way that a Haredi should spend his time. Because if that was it, it would be very simple. It could be like Moshe Rabbeinu said to Shevet Reuven and Gad, when they said, can we stay on the other side of the Jordan? Moshe said to them, Parashat Matot, your brothers are going to go into battle and you're going to stay here? It would be very simple. So obviously, you can't just stay here. You need to fight. I think at center, it really revolves around, how do I view the Jewish people coming back to the land of Israel after 2,000 years of Galus? This is what I spoke about on Yom HaTzmaut. Do you see this as something that God is behind, and therefore, obviously, I'm going to do everything I can? Or is this Galus like any other Galus? If it's Galus like any other Galus, what Jew would volunteer to fight in the Polish army? A Jew would volunteer to fight in the Hungarian army. And so, too, what Jew would volunteer to fight in the Israeli army? Is a Galus like any other Galus? That's what it comes down to. Everything that I just told you is just ignored. But if you're a religious Zionist, you say, Bezrat Hashem, this is the beginning of the redemption. I'm going to do whatever I can. I view it as a privilege to be a part of this. There's so much more I want to say, but I'm not going to say it, and the time is late.
Part two.
What?
Part two.
No. No.
Boo.
No. Okay. I'll just say a little bit. Whoever wants to leave can leave. It goes back to what I said on Monday about the open-ended kola. It's this new phenomenon that has changed the way Jews have lived their life. We never had such a thing. Today, we have an entire population that is being educated to treat work as b'di'evet. Even though, as I said, you know, in your ksuba, you're right, you're going to support your wife. To teach your son a trade is a mitzvah that a father is supposed to do. But yet, one-third of the Israeli population, and a large percent in America as well, are not being taught any secular studies, which can make it very difficult to get a job. Today, Haredim who have jobs in Israel get paid 50% less on average than do non-Haredim because they're not educated. They don't have the same education. So they're doing less, you know, paying jobs. That's the only thing they're capable of doing. They're not making the big bucks because they're not capable of making the big bucks. And then you have, here's how all the politics comes in. So let's say I'm a politician, Matan, of the Haredi party. My constituents are poor. Why? Because they've been educated for the last three generations that the best thing to do is just sit and learn and get handouts, whether that be from my kolo check or from whatever the government gets me. So now what's my job as a politician for Shas or Aguda? To get as much money from my constituents as possible. So what will they do? My opinion, they'll sell their soul to do that. So for example, when there was a debate whether or not Israel should enter into the Oslo Accords and allow Yasser Arafat, this arch-terrorist, to now become, instead of persona non grata, some person who we now are going to give, you know, some sort of authority and let him represent the Palestinian people, and the country was like divided and said we shouldn't do it, Shas voted for it because the Israeli government said we'll give you money. He said, okay, we're down. And when Bibi Netanyahu's government was going to decide like to kick out the Likud then with Ariel Sharon, kick out Jews from Gaza, by this time Rabbi changed his mind, but the Agudas said, fine, you know, we don't have that many Jews from our constituents living in Gaza. It's mostly religious Zionists, not Haredim. So, yep, kick them out. As long as we get money, we'll vote for kicking the Jews out of Gaza. So they did. Now, I get why they did it, because they look at their own parochial needs. They didn't look at, what does Am Yisrael need? They looked at, what does my voter need? My voter needs this. And to me, that's such a corrupt way of looking at things. No one's looking at a bigger picture. Not to mention the economic drain. As I said before, with so many people don't work, how do you expect to support a society? So then you also have some of the brightest and best Israelis leave because they don't want to be the only ones that are they pay crazy taxes because they're working. So they say, I'll go somewhere else. I'll do my startup in California. So we're so proud of our Israelis that left the country that started all these startups. They left the country for a reason. We're driving them out. So I think that you have some of these gedolim that are very big leaders in Torah, but they're misleading their population into thinking that every individual's learning of Gemara is the most important thing, as opposed to looking at some bigger picture, and they ignore, I don't know, the dilemmas of starting a nation after 2,000 years in Galus, or contemporary social or economic questions. They don't pertain to my constituents, and therefore they're ignored. I think that's losing sight of the bigger picture. So there it is. I got it off my chest. And is that what I feel? So like one guy asked me today, you know, if I have the opportunity to stay Shana Gimel or go to the army, what should I do? So I'm convinced that 99% of the staff here will tell you to stay Shana Gimel. I don't know if I would feel the same way. You can do both. Great. In Merkaz, for example, you can stay in the yeshiva as long as you want, and then you go to the army. There's a lot of yeshivas like that. You can push it up. One guy I know is in Seret Matkal. He's been there for like 10 years. He learned first like 4 or 5 years, 5, 6 years. Then he went to the army. Obviously, it means he's pushing off his whole life for a long time. Right? You know, life meaning like working and stuff like that. Now he's married in Seret Matkal. But like he's making a salary in the army. But like you're pushing off things. Right? But he viewed, okay, I want to do this. I got to Seret Matkal. I first want to make sure I'm really, really strong. So he's very strong. He's in the army, like, since he's like 5, 6 years post high school. And he went to Seret Matkal, and he's great. Right? He now just finished. He's the same age as my son, like 33 years old. He just now finished. Now he's starting, you know. Now, part of Seret Matkal, they want to stay longer. They sent him to school. He got some degree, whatever. Is what they do. They have all these gimmicks to try to keep you longer. Okay, we'll give you a quick, accelerated BA, you know, type of thing. You know, my son was even a miluim. He got some accelerated MA, you know, because he's like a high officer, you know, try to keep him happy. Okay, great. But, I don't know. Like, I think, like, you should feel you want to do this. Right? Not just, it's an important thing for Israelis to do. We should feel we want to do. Okay? Anyway, that's my feeling. Rabina was saying to me, how come none of our guys think about going to the army? I think it's because most guys don't know anyone goes to the army. So therefore, it's not even on your radar. So that's my own feeling. I just put it out there. Thank you for coming, allowing me to get things off my chest. And thank you for Dovi for recording.
I have a question.
Maybe someone else.